Cutting Audio. Deathlands.
Here it comes!
Outlanders.
Warning, meltdown imminent.
The Executioner.
Tag, you're it.
Stony Man.
Brace for impact!
Now playing at the theater in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Kate Torrey, Timberlee Chanel, Thomas Penny, and Christopher Graybill. Deathlands 66, Separation. Black clouds of pain washed over young Dean Cotter as he began to surface from the Matrans jump. It was like emerging from a sea of dark, brackish water. Every muscle coursed with lactic acid, making any movement difficult beyond imagining. As Dean swam upward, a patina of light washed across the thin skin of the surface above. He moved toward the light with determination. Dean struck the surface, emerging from the icy thickness below into the weak light, gasping as the oxygen hit his lungs, the viscous liquid falling away from his skin, dripping off his hair. That moment between sleep and awakening, that fraction of a second that seemed an eternity, this was the time when the hallucinations came, the time when nightmares at the back of his brain were called forth. As he floated on the surface of consciousness, breaking for land, Dean drifted back to the world of his deepest fears and insecurities, the things that he dare not admit into his conscious mind. Lately, the jumpmares had a recurring theme. A younger Dean, still a child really, standing before his mother as she told him of his true father, the son of a baron, not the man who was her husband and the powerful baron of his own ville. He could still clearly see his mother's face. Sharona, Rona to him, had once been a beautiful woman, but that was something that lay in her past. In the present of this memory, she had been ravaged by sickness. Where once she had been slim and graceful, with feminine curves that had drawn the eye of Ryan Cotter. When Dean last saw her, she was thin and gaunt, her flesh little more than skin to cover her skeletal frame. Ghostly and gray, her once smooth complexion had broken out with sores in patches around her hairline and her bloodless lips. Her clothes hung like rags from her body.
But why can't I stay with you until... Why can't I be with you?
Because it isn't safe, boy. When I die, you'll be all alone. I've taught you how to survive, but a little boy alone in the Deathlands doesn't have much of a chance. Your future lies with your father.
If he's so great, where's he been when we both needed him?
He doesn't know about you.
Even though there was a part of him that knew this was only a half-memory, or likely a hallucination, Dean still felt that same heart-tearing burst of emotions he'd felt when he had been separated from his mother. As he was pulled farther away from Sharona, he could see that she was no longer the tall, graceful figure that she had once been. She was bowed by her illness, the sudden stabs of light illuminating the paleness of her face and hands, reflecting the moonlight with a deathly glow. He could feel the pull taking him away from his mother, could see her recede into the background, her eyes following him, intense, even as the distance between them increased. And then the scenes changed rapidly, passing in front of his eyes. He was reunited with the father who had saved his life. He was in the Nicholas Brody school, then kidnapped, forced to fight for his very life in the ruins of Las Vegas as part of a gladiatorial contest for warring barons. He'd been rescued by his father and the group that had become his friends and family. Since he had joined the Companions, he had forged strong bonds with all of them, particularly with Ryan, his father. But there was something within him that was still empty, still missing. Sharona had taught him to survive. She was always with him. He could never forget. Yet time had pushed her to the back of his mind. She came to him in his jump dreams, and he remembered her fierce love, a mother's comforting touch. The light was closing in on him.
Oh, Jesus!
The brightness hurt his eyes, making the blood pound in his ears as his eardrums threatened to blow. His equilibrium faltered. His guts turned, the bile rising as he felt the wave of nausea about to crest. Dean screwed his eyes tight to block the light and failed. Everything forgotten in the wrenching pain. The pain of regaining consciousness.
Careful there, my boy. Or you may tread softly on my dreams. Or at least vomit upon them. Which is perhaps no more than they deserve.
The boy's eyes hurt, the muscles around the sockets cramping. He suddenly realized that he was still holding them tightly shut. He relaxed and opened them slowly. As his eyes adjusted to the brightness, he could see that he was in the Mat-Trans chamber, face to the floor. The discs beneath still glowed faintly from the jump. Shutting his eyes to stem the nausea, Dean turned onto his back. He slowly opened his eyes again, adjusting more quickly this time to the light. The armaglass walls that enclosed the Companions were white, shot through with the faintest tinge of blue. Doc Tanner was nearest him. Doc's lion's head swordstick and Lamar percussion pistol were by his side. Dean instinctively reached out to grasp his own Browning high power, which he had placed by his side before the jump. As he grasped the blaster, a head appeared above him, framed by plaits secured at the ends by beads that draped down, partly obscuring the face. However, there was no mistaking the warmth in the brown eyes examining him.
How you doing, Dean?
Terrible, Mildred.
Dr. Mildred Wyeth's hand moved over Dean's face, her thumb gently lifting his eyelid to expose more of the eyeball.
That's very yellow there, and you're sweating badly. By the look of what you'd puked, I'd say you were dehydrated, which sure as hell won't speed recovery.
Dean raised himself up onto one elbow. The chamber began spinning.
Oh, shit. It doesn't usually hurt this bad.
John, have you got any water?
Sure, Millie.
John Barrymore Dix came into view. Like Mildred, he seemed to have handled the jump well and was walking easily. The armorer handed a canteen of water to Mildred, and she proffered it to Dean.
Drink this, Dean. But take it easy or you'll just bring it back up.
Thanks.
Dean took several small sips, feeling the water slide down his throat. He didn't feel any better immediately, but he knew he would after a short while. Mildred took back the canteen.
Take it easy, boy. Just let your balance come back before you move too much. I've got to see how Doc and Jack are doing. The old buzzard seems as near to normal as he ever gets, but Jack is still out.
Right.
Dean watched Mildred move toward the prone old man. Because of the intense stress that his body had been put through during his two trawls through time, which had seen him dragged from the 19th to the 20th century and then beyond into the world of the Deathlands, Doc Tanner looked far older than his actual years. At times, his mind was as fragile as his body appeared to be. Doc had regained consciousness, but was still severely disoriented. Dean felt his head begin to clear a bit as he looked around the chamber. His father was talking to Christy. Their voices were low, and he couldn't make out their words, but he felt a surge of relief that they were once more unaffected by the jump. The old technology was terribly erratic, and its residual and cumulative effect on the human body was still an unknown. Ryan Carter had already shouldered his Steyr rifle and stood erect, his muscular frame topped by the tumbling curls that were so like Dean's, the handsome face distorted by the scar that ran down his cheek to his jaw from the empty socket beneath his eye patch. Next to him, Christy seemed small, although the woman was actually quite tall, and her womanly curves shaped a muscular frame. Her mane of Titian red hair curled around her head protectively when her mutisense told her of danger. At the moment, it hung loose and free, suggesting that they were, for the moment, safe.